Hello, everybody. This is Gerald Celendi, and it's Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024. And once again, we are honored to have with us a man of men, a true American in heart, body, spirit, and soul, someone who knows about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, former Supreme Court judge in New Jersey, not just BS, but real facts, is Judge Andrew Napolitano. Judge, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Gerald. A pleasure. And thank you for the very generous introduction. We live in dark and dangerous times. And you and I and the people that we associate with and put on our shows are outliers, but we need the courage to persist.
You know, before we began, you said, how you doing, Gerald? I said, yeah, I'm blessed for everything that I have and, you know, healthy and thankful for everything. But my heart is broken when I see the decline of this country. And it's not, you know, the cover of our magazine this week makes it really clear. As we, the plantation workers of Slavelandia, are serfs of robber barons 2.0. The hedge funds, the private equity groups, the venture capitalists. When we were young men, these groups did not exist. And once upon a time, this used to be called, we may get blacklisted for saying this, the land of opportunity. It's gone. It's gone. And your article really, in so many ways, and you got to read this article, it'll be out tomorrow. You really explain it in very different ways. The tyranny of the majority. Which is better? To be ruled by one tyrant 3,000 miles away, or by 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away? And that was Reverend Mather Biles, 1706 to 1778. He said, does it really matter if the instrument curtailing liberty is a monarch or a popularly elected legislature? The conundrum, along with the witty version of it, put to a Boston crowd in 1775 by a little-known colonial-era preacher, addressed the age-old question of whether liberty can long survive in a democracy.
You and I have talked about this, and we are of the view that it cannot, that with every tick of the clock, Jefferson predicted this, I mentioned it at the end of the article, liberty shrinks and government grows. I mean, two of the first things the Congress did was to establish the first National Bank of the United States. And the guy who wrote the Constitution, who was a member of the House of Representatives at the time, James Madison, gave one of the greatest speeches in the history of the country. Students probably don't even study it anymore, called the Bank Speech, which was a tirade against the first National Bank of the United States, arguing, A, it's economically dangerous, and B, it isn't authorized under the Constitution. Congress enacted it anyway. Then they enacted the Alien and Sedition Acts, which made it a crime to criticize the government over Madison's objections, notwithstanding the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. And the government has continued to grow without cessation, slowly, slowly, step by step. There are leaps and bounds during wartime where it grows more rapidly. But the growth has been regular, consistent, and systematic. And for every government growth, it is accompanied by a loss of liberty and property. I'll say it again. For every step of government growth, it is accompanied by a loss of liberty and property. Today, we're at the point where taxes are, where you and I live, 50% of your income, and it's hard for you to do anything on your own property. You go through this in the beautiful little town where you live. It's hard to do anything on your own property without government permission. This is not the government that Madison and Jefferson gave us, but this is what it has become.
Now, what your article here, everybody really needs to read this. And you got what did you write? I think you said that there were 3 million people in the federal government.
Yeah, this guy, Mather Bliles, this loyalist preacher in 1775, was afraid of 3,000 people running the government. Today it's 3 million. That's who the federal government employs. Does the public know that? 3 million people work for the federal government, civilian and military, full time. 90% of it not even hinted at in the Constitution.
You go in his speech, Madison warned that a creeping expansion of the federal government would trample the powers of the states and also the unenumerated rights of the people that the Ninth Amendment, his pride and joy because it protected individual personal natural rights, prohibited the government from denying or disparaging. You go on to say, had Madison been alive during the presidency of anti-Madison Woodrow Wilson, who gave us World War I, the Federal Reserve, the administrative state, and the federal income tax, he would have recoiled at the president destroying the three-sided table. Wilson did that by leading the campaign to amend the Constitution so as to provide for the direct taxation of individuals and the direct popular election of senators. Please explain this.
Sure. So Madison's genius was to create a government like a three-sided table. At one side are the people in the House of Representatives. On another side are the states as states in the United States Senate. On the third side is the concept of nation state with the presidency. The states created the federal government and not the other way around. Ronald Reagan reminded us of that in his first inaugural address. In order to maintain their sovereignty and their influence in the federal government for the first 150 years of the country, senators were sent by state legislatures. They represented the states as states. They didn't represent the people in the states. The people in the states were already represented in the House of Representatives. When Wilson persuaded the country to change this, the Senate just became a six-year smaller version of the House of Representatives, and the individual sovereignty of the states went away. And they began enacting legislation to take power away from the states and give it to the central government. So Reagan's concept that you can vote with your feet. If you don't like the regulations in Massachusetts, you can move to New Hampshire. If you don't like the taxes in New Jersey, you can move to Pennsylvania. You can still move, but you're not going to find the relief you once were able to find because so much of government today is federalized and made uniform by the federal government trampling the rights of the states. It started under Woodrow Wilson, and it continues to get worse and worse. So when the federal government wants to do something that the Constitution doesn't authorize, let's say lower the speed limits, it bribes the states. So it'll go to New Jersey and say, here's $200 million to repave all the federal highways in the state. But if you take this money, you have to lower the speed limits on all your highways. They did this to every state in the union. One state, South Dakota, objected, said, give us the cash. We don't even have speed limits on our highways. There's nothing to lower. And South Dakota sued the federal government. A very famous case called South Dakota versus Dole. Dole was Elizabeth Dole, yeah. Bob Dole's wife. At the time, she was the Secretary of the Treasury. Supreme Court said, if you want the money, you take the strings. What left-wing pinko big government president signed this piece of legislation? Ronald Reagan. They all fall for this. They all fall for this, no matter what their personal values are and what their words are. They all increase the size of the federal government at the expense of state sovereignty and individual liberty.
And you mentioned Elizabeth Dole. Her husband sucked off the public tit his entire life.
Yes, yes. Every time I make a charitable donation and realize it's no longer deductible because it wasn't big enough. I think of Bob Dole because he proposed that that legislation. I mean, I shouldn't be paying income taxes to begin with, and I should be able to do what I want with my money. But today, the government controls what we do.
Yeah, and again, who was the government? Elizabeth Dole, Bob Dole, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck.
George W. Bush.
Yeah. One clown, arrogant piece of crap after another, telling us what to do, and the people obey. You know, your article here is so important, and everyone really needs to read it again. Again, you talk about democracy. You should check out the cover of our recent Trends Journal about what we call democracy. And we have the clowns from a country near you, Macron, Sunak in France, Macron over there in France, Sunak in the UK. Yeah, here it is. An idiot's delight. There's no democracy.
Is that Netanyahu with the blue bow tie?
You got it.
Well, he's happy because the guy in the middle just gave him $20 billion with a B dollars.
$20 billion. Yep. And
that is a great cover, An Idiot's Delight. I don't remember that one. Is that recent? It must be recent.
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
Wow.
And so what you're saying here is so important. And you mentioned also the 3 points, you know, the of government, you know, the people, what are the three areas again that you said?
The people, the states, and the concept of nationhood. The people's the House of Representatives, the state, the Senate, states, the Senate, when the states used to choose their own senators, and the concept of nationhood is the presidency. That was his genius, to prevent the accumulation of too much power in one place. Now, the true levers of power are exercised by the people that control the government. Military, industrial, welfare, warfare, high tech, surveillance, suppression of free speech, donor class, cartel. And it is a cartel.
It's a cartel. It's a crime syndicate.
There's a member of the House of Representatives, I don't remember his name, who wears an IDF uniform on the floor of the House of Representatives. And he recently, if you haven't seen this, it's going to make your blood pressure go up, Gerald. He recently offered legislation to provide financial benefits to Americans who join the IDF. I mean, this is just madness. Madness. Now, this legislation hasn't passed. It hasn't even gotten beyond the proposal stage. But you know, the Republicans in the House are going to fall over each other to see who could be more pro Netanyahu than the other, and they'll vote for this.
You know, again, you mentioned the three areas. There used to be another part of this. It used to call the fourth estate. It used to be the media.
That's when the media challenged the government. Right now, the media works for the government.
Yeah, they're prostitutes. They're media whores. They get paid to put out by their corporate pimps and their government whoremasters. That's all they are. And again, everybody, that if you really want to know what in the world is going on in so many different ways on the geopolitical front, you really have to go to the judge's site, Judging Freedom. The guests that you have on there, Phil Giraldi, Colonel McGregor, Scott Ritter, one after another. Tell us some of the more people, the other people that are coming on.
Phil Giraldi is on today. Actually, we are going to talk about this thing that I just mentioned. The proposal to provide financial benefits to Americans who join the Israeli Defense Forces. The whole name is a misnomer. It's not Israeli Defense Forces. It's Israeli Expansion Forces. It's Israeli Genocide Forces. It's Israeli Slaughter Forces. It's Israeli Offensive Forces. But, you know, euphemism, they call themselves the IDF. Phil is, if you think I'm animated about this, Phil is more so. John Mearsheimer, the great, brilliant, gifted West Point graduate, PhD, Cornell, professor of political philosophy, University of Chicago, will be talking about how Israel is its own worst enemy. Yep. under Bibi Netanyahu. It has isolated itself politically, diplomatically, and it's about to be isolated economically. And we'll be talking about the consequences of a prosecution of Netanyahu at the International Criminal Court. And then Aaron Matei, young Canadian American journalist who's a regular on my show, who is an expert not only in Gaza, but also in Ukraine, and is pointing out why is Ukraine escalating its offensive attacks on Russia's mainland, because it is so desperate, because yep. it knows the end is near. And I don't know if you saw these recent clips by Victoria Nuland. She's back, and she's saying it's time for us to start attacking Russia. I mean, she is really a committed ideologue who can't see beyond the blinders that she's put on her face.
We write about that in this week's Trends Journal, what she's been saying and how she's back in there. And again, you go back to our Trends Journal, if I could find it here, from 2000 and here we go. 2014. So happy that guy is. It's the United States overthrow of the democratically elected government of Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine.
Well, she's the cookie monster. She's the one that handed out cookies to the people that were killing others in Maidan Square. She instigated the whole thing.
Yep. And she's caught on the cell phone talking to that guy, Jeffrey Pyatt, who was the United States ambassador to Ukraine, saying, fuck the EU. We're going to put Yatsen there, that little clown Yatsenyuk. There's an article written by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, spring of 2014. Washington is driving the world to the final war. Ukraine presented the perfect opportunity for Washington to advance its hegemonic agenda. In a speech at the National Press Club last December, which was 2013, Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland boasted that Washington had invested $5 billion in non-governmental organizations in Ukraine, quote, to teach democracy.
Unbelievable.
Right there.
So talk about teaching. Do you know what Victoria Nuland does now?
Yeah.
She team teaches a course at Columbia University yeah. with Hillary Clinton. Can it get any worse? Hillary Clinton and Victoria Nuland in the same classroom, at the same podium, teaching the same students at the same time.
You get a degree in brainwashing.
Yes. Very good. Yeah. Very clever, my friend.
Yeah, and again, it's not Hillary Clinton, it's Hitlery Clinton. You forgot when she was interviewed? And they said, how did you feel when you heard that Muammar Gaddafi was killed? We came, we saw, he died.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, going back to what's going on and about the ICJ saying that Netanyahu is guilty of genocide. Let me be clear. Contrary to allegations against Israel made by the International Court of Justice, what is happening is not genocide. We reject that, Biden said.
Well, I mean, it's as obvious as can be. Biden doesn't want to call it genocide because he's funding it and he would expose himself to prosecution. And that would expose Tony Blinken and Jake Sullivan and probably also Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, to prosecution. They're never going to admit it is what it is. But if you listen to what Israeli leaders have said about what their goal is, they don't regard the Palestinians as human. Nope. They regard them as the moral equivalent of blades of grass. And what they're doing in Gaza, they refer to, this is their language, not ours, not mine, as mowing the grass or mowing the lawn.
Yep. And let's not forget that Guy Gallant, who's also they're bringing up on charges, he also said that they're human animals.
Correct.
So now,
and when you want to kill a group of people who are members of the group because of an immutable characteristic of birth, race, nationality, etc., you first have to demonize them and take their rights away. And that's what the Israelis have been attempting to do to the Palestinians. This morning, Spain, Norway, and Ireland announced that they're recognizing the state of Palestine as a free and independent country. And of course, Netanyahu proceeded to kick their ambassadors out of Tel Aviv.
Genocide. The deliberate and systematic destruction of a group of people because of their ethnicity, nationality, or religion. That's according to Encyclopedia Britannica. And then as I mentioned, and I'll keep repeating it, complete genocide. Jared Kushner calling Gaza waterfront property valuable. You remember that?
Oh, yes.
Jared Kushner, former President Donald Trump's son-in-law, made comments at Harvard University describing waterfront property in the Gaza Strip as valuable. Quote, it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there. An unfortunate situation. Could you imagine over a million people, houses destroyed, country destroyed, living in tents, starving to death? A little bit of an unfortunate situation there. But from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out of there and clean it up. Genocide. Genocide.
And, you know, this tells you and me and the people watching and listening to us now that in this respect, Israel and Gaza, it would be even worse under a president, Donald Trump. I realize there's a radical difference between the two of them, and a lot of our fans believe Trump brings assets that Biden lacks. But in this respect, he'd be more stridently pro-Israel government than Biden would be. And he'd have his son-in-law developing that waterfront property before his presidency was over.
Yeah. And again, I want to go back to also what you mentioned about the Ukraine war. And you're going to have a guest on that says they're going to keep ramping it up. We've been warning this in the Trends Journal, by the way.
You have been saying that desperation leads to escalation, and that's exactly what this guest is going to, that's the case he's going to make.
Yep.
Yes, right.
Yep. Desperation right. leads to escalation. Very well put, because they're losing the war. We said, as Scott Ritter did and others, McGregor, before the war started, there's no way in the world that Ukraine's going to defeat Russia. I mean, this is a country where Napoleon, back in what, 1812, left Poland with 420,000 troops to attack Moscow, came back with 10,000.
Correct.
Operation Barbarossa under Hitler.
Correct.
Killed over 25 million Russians.
Correct.
Destroyed their land, according to John F. Kennedy in his speech to graduating students at American University in 1963, that they lost the land in Russia, their farms, their factories, their homes, the equivalent of Chicago East. And who was the first to defeat the Germans, the Russians? And
right.
So what we said, what they're going to, being that they're losing, and the United States, the UK, and Germany keep giving them more and more weapons, they're going to attack deep inside Russia. They're going to maybe hit a nuclear power plant. They're going to do something to rally these stupid people to fight the Russians. They're going to escalate this war, and the same thing is going to happen with the Israeli war, because there's no way in the world they're going to win this. This is the beginning of the end of Israel, and they're going to maybe launch their operation, what do they call it, Samson option, where they go nuclear if they lose.
Right. Samson option is what they had threatened to do when they're going down. They'll take everybody down with them.
They have, what, between 200 and 400 nuclear warheads.
Illegal technology stolen from the U.S. by their spies.
Right. But it's okay for Israel to have nuclear weapons, but not Iran.
Right.
No, no, no. Not North Korea. Only Israel. They're the chosen people. Says so in the good book, chapter 6, section 8. They're making up this crap. And most of the people have no clue of what in the world is going on. No clue at all. And we are in the most dangerous times, I believe, in the history of the world. And if we don't have peace on earth, it's going to be hell on earth.
I'm sorry to say that I agree with you. Not sorry because I don't want to agree with you, but sorry because these are dark and dangerous times and things seem to be getting worse and worse. We've been doing these shows together for 2 years, and every Wednesday when we talk, the state of affairs is more precarious than it was the previous Wednesday.
Yeah. And again, it's out of the mainstream media what's really going on, and the people have no clue. So go to Judging Freedom, and you're seeing a bunch of people on there, real men and women that are fighting for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we all have to unite for that. Judge, thanks so much for being on. Thank you for all that you do. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Gerald. All the best, my friend.